Should it be harder for landlords to evict their tenants for no reason at all?
Should safe and healthy homes come before the interests of private investment?
Is the rent too damn high?
If you answered yes to any of these questions, join us for the next Portland Renters Assembly.
KBOO is a proud sponsor of the Portland Renters Assembly, a gathering of people united by the burden of rent and committed to housing as a human right.
The next two assemblies are on Sunday, July 12th, from 12 to 2 p.m. at the North Portland Library, with speakers on how race intersects with gentrification.
And on Wednesday, July 15th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at Colonel Sumner's Park, with speakers on community organizing and mobilizing.
Tell your story and join the conversation. For more information, go to kboo.fm and click on Community Events.
Portland School Board elections are May 19th. What are the candidates saying?
Hi, this is Julie Esparza Brown. I am running in Zone 1. As a Latina educator with more than 30 years experience educating students with disabilities as well as English learners, that along with my life experiences as a Latina will bring a lot to the board and help us understanding the new diversity in our schools.
Tune into KBOO April 27th through the 30th at 5:45 for special school board election coverage.
Oops, sorry about that. It was a little old. I was just running what was on my board. So we'll go now to the Cornel West interview. Cornel West is a prominent Democratic intellectual and radical academic. He is professor of philosophy and Christian practice at Union Theological Seminary and professor emeritus at Princeton University. He has also taught at Yale, Harvard, and the University of Paris. He has written over 20 books and has edited 13. He is best known for his classics, Race Matters and Democracy Matters, and for his memoir, Brother West, Living and Loving Out Loud. Cornel West was in Portland late last month for the General Assembly of the Unitarian Universalist Association. KBOO volunteer Rachel Grozanek was there and sat down with Cornel West for this interview.
Describe the role that you see faith playing in change for racial equality.
Yes, I think faith is always a species of courage. It's the courage to tell the truth, it's the courage to love, and it's the courage to hope. And there must be a fundamental role for all three forms of courage. And faith fuels that kind of threefold courage.
I'm really glad you mentioned hope, because one of my questions is about that. What role does hope have in America today? Is it something that, you know, exists more for the privileged? Does it help with reform, or does it kind of placate?
Yeah, I think that hope in the dominant America is reduced to a cheap optimism. And it's usually individualistic, and it's tied to a very narrow conception of the American dream. Whereas hope in the way in which Martin Luther King Jr., the way in which Curtis Mayfield, Nina Simone talked about it, really is about trying to ensure that the most weak, the most vulnerable, the poor, working class, the gay brothers and lesbian sisters, the indigenous peoples, the disabled, themselves are embraced in the sharing of our resources and the sharing of our love. And in that sense, then, hope is always part of a collective movement that is grounded on ensuring that all individuals can flower and flourish. Mm-hmm. So it's a very radical distinction between hope versus optimism.
Can you elaborate more on that distinction? And as if I didn't understand it at all, that'd be fantastic.
Well, one would be, we know that there's no optimism in the blues. The blues is neither optimistic nor pessimistic. The blues is about being a prisoner of hope. So that when you woke up this morning, mind's wrestling with heartache. strange fruit that southern trees bear that Billie Holiday sang about. All that is looking catastrophe in the face and still having the courage to resist it for the blues in the form of song, in the form of rhythm, in the form of melody. On the political level, it's in the form of struggle, in the form of collective resistance. And so in that sense, we have to be blues men and women, not cheap optimists tied to the dominant forms of American culture.
Sort of touching on that individualistic versus communal. So in the wake of the horrible tragedy that happened at Charleston, a lot of people have been criticizing politicians and the media for sort of only painting a narrative of forgiveness and using that to sort of sidestep the issue of deep-rooted racism in America and how to change that. And I wondered if you could respond to people who are voicing those criticisms.
Yeah, well, I think part of the greatness of the Black freedom struggle is that we've always produced people who refuse to hate in the face of hatred. We always wanted love to have the last word. Unfortunately, when you attempt to have love having the last word, that meekness can be confused with weakness. So you can have, for example, a premature forgiveness, which is to say that forgiveness is the highest form of love. So you can make sure that hatred does not have the last word. But by prematurely forgiving, then the corporate media will zero in on that. And lo and behold, present a image of Black people as not a fighting people, but just a forgiving people.
Yeah.
A loving people tied to forgiveness as opposed to a fighting people tied to love. Love is tied to fighting as well as forgiveness. The media makes you choose one over the other. But a lot of it also has to do with the fact that forgiveness is a very difficult, protracted, spiritual process. It's not an isolated utterance. See, so somebody, you know, rapes your mother and you forgive them the next day. You see, that's not a genuine forgiveness.
Yeah.
Just as human beings, it's not a genuine forgiveness. You can say that you refuse to be dragged down into the gutter of hatred by refusing to hate that person. That's fine. But at the same time, you're not ready to forgive. You got to mourn. You've got to grieve. You got to wrestle with your own demons. You have to acknowledge the profound love you have for your mother. And then maybe down the line, you're ready to forgive. And I think that's true as well, though, in terms of the killing of innocent people. And so you got a corporate media eager to downplay Black people as a fighting people. But then you also do have very sincere and loving and magnificent Black people sometimes giving premature forgiveness that reinforces that dominant narrative.
Recently, there have been so many tragedies like that, and they've been getting media attention. And they've been inciting people to activism. But is that really what will cause change? What does cause change? And what can we do in the wake of these things to create change?
Well, it's a wonderful question because no one of us have any control of history. We don't know exactly what causes change. We do know there has to be strong, organized people's power that's brought to bear against the status quo, one. Two, we have to have strong conflict within the dominant group so that it begins to weaken in some way. But then the third element's always mysterious. You don't know. You know, it's economic processes, impact of war, impact of various events over which you have no control. Sometimes it's cultural events, sometimes it's political events. you just don't know. In the same way that who would have thought that they would be removing all these Confederate flags based on an unpredictable event of a gangster who kills innocent people? You know, no one could predict that. People have been struggling to get those flags down for decades. And then all of a sudden, boom. People have been struggling for fights against homophobia such that the humanity of gays and lesbians can be affirmed and they're able to marry. Who would have thought? Boom. Just so quickly that it comes about. Sometimes you wait a long time, other times it comes about right away.
Going back to conflict and the dominant, do you think that economic factors like class struggle that are sort of gaining more momentum right now can help with racial issues? And if so, how?
Well, I think that they'll have to. I think that we have to make the connection, the very tight connection between the wealth inequality, which is tied to class struggle, the struggle for women's humanity against patriarchy, struggle against homophobia, struggles against white supremacy, and the struggle against ecological catastrophe. We got to make connections that are tied together in such a way that people can see very clearly that there's moral as well as material reasons to coalesce, to form strong coalitions.
What do you think are maybe some ways to make those connections for people?
I think we have to have stronger voices in a variety of different movements and communities that make those connections explicit. We haven't had enough voices to make it. The kind of voices, let's say, Brother McGibbon in the ecological movement, bringing in the critiques of white supremacy and so forth. Bernie Sanders, powerful critic of Wall Street, but also bringing in the critique of patriarchy, also bringing in the critique of white supremacy, also bringing in the critique of homophobia and so on. Black leaders not confining themselves simply to so-called race issues, but understanding that black people, brown people, red people are also members of the working class. Some of them are gay and lesbian. Some of large numbers of them are women. So that all of these issues affect the community, so that we begin to see the ways in which we can come together. Issues of immigration in regard to brown brothers and sisters, the ways in which these are issues that affect each and every one of us, so that it's not isolated.
So we need louder voices and those movements connecting the dots for people.
Absolutely.
That would be amazing.
Oh, it'd be a beautiful thing. It'd be a beautiful thing.
Maybe one sort of lighter question.
Sure, sure.
You've done a few spoken word albums.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Amazing. What are you, who are some of your favorite artists right now?
Who are out performing now, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Really? Oh,
yeah.
Lord. It'd be Raheem Devon and Anthony Hamilton and Jill Scott, Angie Stone, Erykah Badu, Anti-Flag, Brother Ali, of course, Talib Kweli and Dead Prayers. Good God Almighty. D'Angelo. But I tend to listen to old school more often.
Yeah.
John Coltrane, Curtis Mayfield, Nina Simone. I actually spend more time listening to them than I do the younger generation.
And that was professor and activist Cornel West. He spoke with KBOO volunteer Rachel Grozanik when he was in Portland on June 27th to deliver the Ware Lecture at the General Assembly of the Unitarian Universalist Association. In the next piece that we hear, KBOO's Jenka Soderberg spoke recently with Valerie Carey, the sister of Miriam Carey, a woman who was shot and killed during an incident on Capitol Hill in 2013. We have this summary of the incident from Democracy Now! On October 3rd, 2013, African-American mother Valerie Carey drove